I'm trying to take advantage of the fact that the PGA Tour is not going on, and maybe I can catch a player or two here and there in the next couple of weeks before the PGA Tour season kicks back off. Maybe catch him in the middle of doing nothing, or maybe I catch him in the middle of trying to organize all of their golf equipment, their golf room, like I did with my buddy Adam Shank, winner on the Korn Ferry Tour. You've probably seen him on the Golf Channel as the like poster boy for excitement when he won on the Korn Ferry Tour. It's like in the commercial. We talk about that a little bit, what it's like being on PGA Tour the past couple of years. He's in his third season, and obviously this season, one of the weirdest. We talk a lot of club talk, go through his bag. He's got a lot of Mizuno in the bag. Definitely is passionate about golf, talking golf and golf equipment. So we get a little bit of that, as well as a lot of advice even for you that you can correlate. Like, he's working on some things in his game that you could probably kind of maybe it'll like spark something in your mind. And the next time you get to go out and practice, you know, whenever that will be, you can maybe use some of the things that Adam's talking about, because it was pretty common sense stuff and it was pretty unique to hear a PGA Tour player talk like that. So we got Adam Shank on the Hanger Hotline. It's presented by Watson Golf next.
The Brian Golf Show.
Four!
Presented by Cobra Puma Golf.
That was an excellent shot.
Yeah, real good form.
So real quick, we're talking Adam Shank, a PGA Tour player and an Indiana boy. So we'll get on the Indiana boy stuff, but you're currently messing around with shit, which I really like. You're tinkering around. Is that what, the PGA Tour stopping play and COVID-19 and coronavirus and all that, it's come to this, where you are now just tinkering with shit?
I do it all year, and especially, I've just started lately here in Indiana. We were in Florida for 4 or 5 weeks after the players, and we just got back to Indiana a week ago, and I have stuff everywhere, like I mentioned, and I'm finally consolidating it to one golf room upstairs in our house. And I just seem like I'll do stuff for 2 hours and not get much done. And I'll look back and it's still unorganized because I find something else. I'm like, oh, I wonder if the swing layer this is, or, oh, I wonder if I switch this shaft. What is, you know, and then there's just endless possibilities. And I feel like I'm doing stuff, but I think more often than not, I'm just running around in circles and not doing anything. Don't tell my wife that. That's what she thinks I do all the time. But, she's laughing in the background right now.
She thinks that what you're doing is important, but we all know that it's really just straight out of boredom or being a golfer in general.
Exactly.
So what is, like, explain some things that are in front of you right now, and like, what golf clubs are you sitting here messing with? Like, what shafts, like, really nerd out with us here?
So I've got, like, I'm organizing all my, what I'm basically doing is decimal staff bags, and I'm organizing them into, I'm going to have 3 woods and hybrids in one bag. I have an embarrassing amount of 2 irons that I'm collecting them all and putting those in one bag. And then I'm going to have a bag of basically all my ping drivers and then all the other drivers that I've collected. And I'm taking shafts from TaylorMade right now, but I've got a lot of extra shafts, the TaylorMade that I actually play in my ping driver, that I just need to take the tips off of. And that way, if I have I need a backup shaft, I can set the ping. And then I'm currently trying the Blue Atmos shaft.
Okay.
Atmos, so a little softer. And then I'm going exactly into the 3 wood. I'm trying it in that one. Then I'm also messing around with the, what's it called? Tour AD, graphite, maybe it's the orange one.
Graphite design. Yeah.
Graphite design, that's it. So I've been messing around with that one a little bit. Just a little bit of stuff everywhere. I've got a graphics that I'm messing around with, the Titleist driver, little bit of everything, if you name it. Some Cobra 3-Woods. I really like some Cobra 3-Woods that I've had in the past and haven't played them for a little while for some reason or another. And grips. The usually play like the multi-compound. I don't know what round they are. I think they're mid-sized. And I've been messing around with a little smaller grip, the Tour Velvet, and then the Tour Velvet Align. Yeah, just a little bit of everything and how it affects the swing weights and just a whole bunch of different stuff.
Well, see, one of the things I was wondering, because, you know, you've been a professional golfer for how long now, Adam?
I think 5 years. I think this might be your 6th.
Yeah, and then it's what, 3 years? This is your 3rd year on the PGA Tour?
3rd year on the PGA Tour.
So what have you learned from a fitting perspective or from a building perspective when it comes to golf clubs? Because it seems like,
you know, you're into, we could have those conversations and it'd be a good conversation, but what have you learned and have your, I guess, like the equipment side of your brain, has it kind of been, I don't know, stimulated a little bit more since joining the PGA Tour?
Definitely stimulated more since joining the tour. And that's more my passion is, and I still love playing golf. I still love playing on the PGA Tour. It's the best thing in the world, but building things for other people or building things for myself, that's when I can sit there and do it for 4 or 5 hours. You know, I'll change it. I'll do something for myself. After an hour, 2 hours, I get bored. If I'm doing something for somebody else or trying to help somebody else, I'm much more into that. And I would say what I've learned just from watching and doing some things on my own is that I don't know shit. I don't know how to do anything. I sometimes just throw something together and get lucky and like it. But most of the time, I end up going back to exactly what I've played for 3 or 4 or 5 years. So I like to take some things because once I find out that it's not better than what I have, I know what I have is the best, and I'm not wondering like, oh, well, I wonder if this shaft does, or if I try this head, you know, a little lower lofted head with this softer shaft, what happens, and all that, you know, let's hit a couple of bad ones on the course, but okay, I like mine better, and I usually just always go back to mine, but there's always that little voice in my head that I can't quiet it unless I try it and then see if it's not better, or if it is better, I'll play it, but 99% of the time it's not better, and then I can go back with full confidence knowing that what I have is the best.
I'm smiling like huge just because you're just describing so many golfers. It's just, that's just what we do. You know, I think it's cool that you like tinkering and building up your own stuff though. I know a lot of people probably on tour and in general, I mean, you know, since kind of opening up my shop in the garage and moving my operation to home and building everyone's sticks out of, I haven't touched my sticks in my garage because mine are like good to go. And for the first time ever as a golf junkie, a golf club junkie, I feel good that my clubs are good to go, but I've been obviously building up everybody else's gear. And, you know, it's just like people are coming out of the woodworks like, yeah, look at my shop and look at what I'm doing. And like everybody, I didn't know that golf club building was such a pastime just because it's a profession for me. I didn't know that people did it as a hobby.
I don't even call mine a hobby. I need to ask you a few questions about like different epoxies that I need to use. And if I want to pull a shaft, how to properly clean it, or how long do I need to let a new shaft fit if I can get the quick epoxy, or just I have some uncut shafts from True Temper that take a couple set of X100s and S400s, and that's my next actually building club, building some sets of irons and pulling other sets and cutting them down a little bit. That's the next step. I just do simple shaft chain. I mean, I can pull a shaft with my heat gun, but I don't have a said shaft puller. So I just have a glorified grip changing station, and that's basically what I have for now because we're never home that much. But
right.
With this break, I have some time now, and I want to get a loft and lie machine. I saw you have a digital one. I was going to ask you about that. How do you feel it works compared to just a normal one? Obviously, is it just as accurate or more accurate?
Well, yeah. I mean, to me, look, I think there's some intricacies with the digital. Like maybe it's a little, you know, look, you got to plug the damn thing in. So, you know, it's basically limited to any place where you have power. You know, look, there's wires, obviously, being electrical. So things like that could happen down the road. But as far as the accuracy goes, and I always get into this with Baker, right? Because like we were always talking about like he'd come to Club Champion and he'd mess with his lofts and lies. And then he would go to the TPC, the Performance Center, and he would mess with the lofts and lies. And so it's like no one machine is really exactly the same. So I guess if there's, you know, I don't know, they're supposed to be, but look, 63 degrees on one machine could be 62 on another. And if you're always bending your gear on one machine, you know, if you go on tour and you're on a certain truck, you need to go to that truck. Like that's what I was talking to Trotty about on a podcast a couple weeks ago, where we were just talking about, you know, he uses one machine, another builder, Wade, uses one machine on the TaylorMade truck. And they know, look, if you built Jason Day's irons off of, you know, Trotty's machine, well, then you need to continue using Trotty's machine because that's what those specs are off of, right? But you calibrate it, man. Like the digital, you set it to zero. So if you feel like things get wonky or it gets off, you can just recalibrate it. It takes 5 seconds and it's done. So, you know, with an analog, you don't have to do that. You know, you just roll with it and it is what it is. But I guess from a standpoint of digital, you can get like down to the quarter of a degree if you want, and you know that it's a quarter of a degree. So if your lie angle on your wedge is not, you know, 64 degrees, but it's 64 and a quarter, the analog machine that most people are using, you got to really look at that and go, yeah, man, that's a quarter. That's about a quarter. On the digital, it just tells you pretty straight up. So I scored by getting that thing. I mean, I can't even tell you. I barely paid much at all for that thing, and they're like $2,000. So I'm like, that's my prized possession right now is that. But that'd be cool if you got a loft and lie machine, maybe like a little shaft puller, a little cutting station. I'll send you everything that I have, like all in, Adam. I think my build shop cost on a professional level, counting the loft and lie machine, like $3,500 to $4,000. I feel like I can do, and as somebody that's done it for the past couple of years as a business, I can literally do anything to a golf club with that operation. So that's kind of what you're looking at. Of course, it's hard to go spend money when you don't have a job technically right now. What's that been like since the PGA Tour slowed down?
It's been different, that's for sure. Actually, the first 3 or 4 weeks, practiced and played a lot at Sawgrass. They luckily stayed open and were deemed an essential business. I guess just because everybody had their own carts and were outside, and for whatever reason, it was deemed essential. So that was a lucky break when we were in Jacksonville. So did a lot of practicing with Coach Andrew Johnson and played a lot with Tyler and the guys. And like I said, we came back to Indiana a week ago. But just working on a few simple swing changes and trying to tighten some things up before it swings back around and opens up, I guess, June 8th. But we have a limited amount of events left. So if I can be prepared and try and get off to a hot start, I can make a nice run up the FedEx Cup. And, you know, if I wouldn't the other way, you know, that's worst case scenario. So I'm trying to not have that happen and stay as prepared as I possibly can.
Would you say this?
But it's been different.
Yeah, I was gonna say, would you say this season thus far has been good, okay? I mean, obviously we haven't won, so it can't be great. But you know, you got some top 20s in there, and what do you say? You're in top 125 of the FedEx Cup currently, from what I last saw last night. So, what kind of, how do you rate the season so far before the break?
Okay, not great, like you said. Not even close to great. I wouldn't even call it good. Just similar to last year. You know, I about this time last year before the break, I had a couple hot tournaments and roll in, and maybe a 7th place finish at the Bolero, and a couple other, maybe 14th or 15th at Wells Fargo. So that was kind of, had a similar season, had a couple good finishes last year, and then moved up once the FedEx Cup playoff started, had a nice finish in Northern Trust, and then at 71st, just one off. But the things I'm tightening up now will hopefully allow me to stay at the top of the leaderboard. I feel like I get there more, you know, a decent amount. I just have struggled to staying inside the top 20 or top 10. So it's tough. You know, you can go in the weekend, and if you have one bad day or one, you know, not so great round in the tournament, and you don't have an awesome 62 or 3 or 4 rounds, you know, it's tough to stay in the, you know, the top 10 or top 20 on tour. And that's kind of where you make your, you know, money in FedEx Cup points at. And on another side note, hard to get subjects on me, but Baker is crazy. He's more crazy than me. I'm sure you've had him on your podcast, but he's
twice.
He's something.
Yeah. Oh my God. Everyone knows how crazy he is, you know, but we love him. We love
crazy,
him.
But he's crazy. He knows it too, I think. So it makes it better.
Well, look, I wouldn't say it if he didn't say it. All right. I love the fact that like 5 minutes goes by and you're like, wait, I got to clear something up. All right. There's crazy, but I'm not that crazy. Yeah. No, he's, so, you know, I would assume that this podcast, people that listen to this pod, they know Baker very well. Cause it, you know, we've had him on twice, before the PGA Tour season started, after he secured his PGA Tour card. And then after he played with Tiger Woods. So we've done that. Have you played with Tiger yet?
I have not.
Oh man. Unfortunately, I have not. Man, I feel like he's already won the PGA Tour season compared to you, just based on that.
I know. No kidding. There's a lot of, he's played with, I guess Tyler McCumber played with them in the same group.
Yep.
Tyler played well and beat him, I do believe, by one or two maybe. So that was, I talked to him a lot about it. He said it was just very, very surreal. A lot of people, as you can imagine, but just a really cool experience. And I've missed him, I think, twice by one group. So I've been close, but I haven't got the potluck yet. But
oh my gosh, Baker, that's got it. So funny. So, but yeah, that the podcast, obviously, like with Baker getting his tour card at Victoria National, a course you're very familiar with. Of course, you won back when the Korn Ferry Tour was the web.com tour, and then you secured your card. Can we go back to that feeling, just since we're talking about what Baker went through, and that's pretty fresh in everyone's mind, him being a rookie this year? Yeah, I mean, you won in a four-man playoff. I mean, it was like dramatic fashion. You were like, I don't know if anybody knows this, and as soon as they Google Adam Schenck, they're going to know. I mean, you were in like every commercial because you were just amped up after making that putt. Like, that's different. I mean, winning, you kind of have a sense that you're going to get your card the moment you win. So take us back to that tournament, that day, I guess.
Yeah, I know. I remember teeing off, and I played with Kyle Thompson. I forget the other gentleman's name. I can picture him, Tom Whitney, and very, really windy. And I remember teeing off with my cell phone in my back pocket, which I do about once a month. I feel like I'm turned. And I teed off with my cell phone in my pocket, hit it down the middle of the fairway, and I'm like, I reached back to my yard truck. I'm like, oh, that feels weird. And of course, my cell phone was in there. Anyway, long story short, windy day. We played. Yes, they're at nine pars. Played okay on the back nine. Come to the last hole in the fairway, needing a par. Full jerk, hook my shot left into the little grant, and they had set up with probably 30 or 40 people in it. So, make bogey, going to the playoff. So I'm thinking, gosh, if I could have parred and won, I would have locked up my PGA Tour card more than likely than not. And now I'm in a four-man playoff. So from making $100,000 to if you don't, now you're making $41,000. So I mean, you know, that's $60,000. It's a lot of money now, and especially back then. And just to get on the PGA Tour, knowing if I would have parred, I'm like, well, I mean, theoretically, I've got about a 25% chance to win this playoff because everybody, you know, it's one or two holes, everybody's about the same. So I'm like, shit. But had a putt in the second playoff hole, and everybody's practiced that, you know, putter. Three-pointer from the corner, the Reggie Miller fadeaway, or whatever your basketball player may be, or you're, you know, to win the 2025 Masters, and I had that. And luckily for me, it was a little downhill, so I like the downhill putts a little more if I'm nervous and hit them as hard.
Yep.
Just have to get them started, and just a left-right breaker, and sure enough, it went right in the middle, and I still remember it like it was yesterday. It was a great feeling. Kind of haven't felt that feeling since. But, you know, winning is hard and it takes a lot. And I feel like I'm getting closer to where I can hopefully contend again and win. It's much harder on the PGA Tour, but, you know, lots of guys that, you know, they win on the PGA Tour that haven't won on the web. So, Tyler Duncan, for example. So it can be done. It's just have to play well for four rounds and catch some breaks. And I would love to have an opportunity to do that again.
When one of your buddies wins, that's got to be something that just makes you go, yeah, okay, I'm still here. I'm still on the right track because I play with that boy. I play with that guy. He's one of my buddies in my group, like my normal group. You guys all play together, you know. That's got to take you to a point where you go, man, I can do this. I mean, this is going to happen. I just got to, the right things have to fall into place, and I got to prepare and execute.
Exactly. And the things I'm working on now, eliminating the little bigger misses and the big left miss for myself. Figured out a couple things with putting. I feel like short game is kind of even more individual than the swing. If I just work on my short game and find a couple, how do you say this? I always practice my short game until I find a couple of shots that I didn't know before. My cat used to caddy for me, Brad Swearingen. He was caddying for me when I won. He mentioned that when he practices his short game, he's a good golfer to his own rights, and he would practice for long enough until he learned a shot or two. And it's maybe one that you knew, but you haven't thought about in a couple of years. But that's kind of always a good way that I'd like to practice short game. Just practice with three balls and practice until the balls are pretty worn out and dirty. And they're pretty scuffed up, and then you've been there a couple hours and learned a couple of shots around the green, and then from there, writing them down and remembering how you did, how you hit them, and what you were doing, and then try them out again the next day and kind of work on them until you can't, not until you get it right, but until more you can't mess it up. That's kind of how I've always felt about short game, and combining that with a few of the swing changes and the putting. I feel like I'm going to have a nice little run when we come back out. I'm sure a lot of people are working hard in the off season and feel that way. So, pretty ready to get started. That way I can see whether it's just, smoke and mirrors confidence or if I'm really onto something.
Right. When there's no competition, it's tough, cause that's kind of like, your test every week. You do your homework throughout the week and then you get your test and you see how you actually, compare in a tournament. Without tournament, everybody says, well, yeah, you're, for a scratch golfer, they're like, yeah, you're a scratch golfer when you go play on the weekend by yourself or with your buddies, but you're, like a five in a tournament. Same thing, I guess, could be said. That's the whole point of, practicing and putting in all the work. You guys just practice a totally different way than anyone else. I mean, and then that just makes sense, obviously, since you do it for a living, but I'm assuming you've kind of always practiced that way. I mean, before college, high school as an amateur golfer, college, and, till you're at now, you've kind of probably always had that work ethic, I'm sure.
A little bit. I feel like a lot of golfers is this way. They work hard and everybody wants to work hard and you spend a lot of time, but if you don't have a plan or know what you're working towards, or if you don't work on what you're bad at, you don't ever get any better. So I'm still pretty sloppy with my practice. I'm better, but amateur golf, college golf, I was not the best practicer, not disciplined, not a lot of talent, some good rounds here and there, but nothing that's going to make me successful on the PGA Tour. And then senior year of college, I kind of got my act together a little more because I was taking some job interviews and quickly realized, I really don't want to have a job right now. I think I can swing this professional golf thing if I just apply myself, and I didn't want to not make it in professional golf because I didn't do everything in my ability to give myself the best chance. That's something I could have lived with. So kind of got my act together then, and I did an extra semester in college and really started to, have goals when I was practicing it and learn some shots and I wrote down, and I've still got notes that I honestly still need to go back through months of notes that I have in my phone and written down everywhere in the old yards book and just organize everything and remember how I did some things and when I was struggling with something, what did I do to correct it and just create, some sort of better plan. And I have one point. It's just, I could do better with some of the off time that I have, but more so just recently in the last couple of years, that's when I've really started to get a little better with my practice. And I try and really work on things that I'm not comfortable with. And if it's, I'm playing a money game, I'm out playing by myself and trying to treat it like a tournament. I'm hitting shots that, I might not necessarily do in a tournament, just to make myself a little more uncomfortable. If it's a cut shot and it's my favorite shot, but, I'll hit the shot, just to make myself more comfortable. And that's the only way I can kind of do it. And you hit some pretty shitty shots and you don't feel comfortable and you hit some weird shots and you kind of get your confidence down. For a lot of people, and myself included, you drop your alignment stick at your range, you hit at your favorite target, you hit, 25 out of 26 balls right at it, and hit a couple drivers right down your targets that you aim at, every time you go out and play, and you get all this confidence that, then you step on a, for us, you step on a new golf course every week, and, it's not the same, and if you can learn to practice that way, makes it easier. But at the same time, it's not so much fun to practice that way because you're uncomfortable. You're hitting, you're practicing what you're not good at. You're hitting, shitty shots. You're putting yourself in uncomfortable situations and trying to figure out what you did wrong and how you can stop doing it. And it's time consuming. It's mentally draining. It's not necessarily confidence building always. And there's obviously a time and a place for confidence building and this kind of practice that I do more often than not. But you see a lot of guys on the PGA Tour that do it, and I feel like they're the most successful ones, in my opinion.
Well, and what you're saying makes so much sense to me, just because, you know, and like I said, I haven't played a lot in like the last week or so, but before that I played a lot in the last month. I played a lot of golf, let's just say, and that's one of the things I was doing. I was like, well, I've got all this time to practice and prepare for whenever I can play in whatever it may be, a Florida Amateur qualifier. I think the Florida Amateur, which normally is in June, has been moved to December this year. So that'll be fun. But it's like, you know, you can do that in Florida, right? I don't mind it. I'm sure everybody's going to love it. It's better than playing in 100 degree heat in June. But, you know, like hitting 100-yard shots with a pitching wedge instead of just hitting my lob wedge or hitting like a, you know, a knockdown gap wedge or something, like taking two clubs and hitting like flighted shots and things like that. And to your point, you hit some really shitty shots. And then, you know, because it's different.
I hate the shot. I'm nervous thinking about it right now. Oh.
Well, right. So, but when you pull it off, like when I can hit like a little pitching wedge that doesn't get but 20 or 30 feet high and it cuts and it's, you know, and it checks, I'm like, oh my God, I'm a professional golfer. This is amazing. Give me, where's Q school? I'm going to go to Q school. Nice. You know, all this shit, yeah, right?
That's
how that shot makes me feel. And then, you know, same thing like off the tee, you know, I've always been kind of a block fader or a big drawer of the ball. And so now I'm just forcing myself to aim down the left. And as long as it doesn't move right to left, I'm happy. I don't care if I, you know, slice it. I want to know that I'm aiming left and it's not going left. And I probably had four straight rounds where the ball didn't go left, but maybe once or twice. And dude, I really felt like the golfer that I could be. I was like 10 under par in four rounds. That's not something I've been in a long time, you know? So it's like, I'm just sitting here going, wow, I'm like, man, I was right. If I can just get the ball to move left to right. But to your point, you know, the rounds where it's not doing that, you're like, God, I suck at golf, man. Like I'm aiming left and it's not going anywhere that I want it to go. And now I'm making double bogeys and all this, you know, so whatnot. But I it's good to hear someone who does this every day go through their own similar challenge in their own way.
It is definitely a challenge. And the last probably two out of three rounds I played a round at TPC Sawgrass the day before we'd left, maybe a week and a half ago, with my caddy, Mark Cairns. It was his birthday. We went out, we were first off at Sawgrass. It was an awesome morning, and I told myself, all right, I'm going to start everything left of where I want to and have it cut back. And I think I hit every shot that started left and cut back. I hit one that didn't. And, you know, the day before was when I started, 2 days before was when I started working on this, you know, starting at left, holding the face and swing left of my club face. And, you know, I know it's going to left, I know it's going to cut. So that was refreshing to be able to see a shot that I knew was going to happen repeatedly, happen over and over again when I was trying to do it. It's just, it makes golf fun when the shot comes out of the window that you're looking and the curve is the, you know, somewhat the correct curve. I'm trying to cut it and it just cuts a little bit. That's fine. If I overcut it, but it started left, that was fine. And I was getting a lesson with Andrew Johnson and Mark was there. And I'm like, all right, today I'm going to start everything left and learn how to, you know, rotate my body more and hold space. And I've had the worst range session and the worst practice I've probably ever had. And this is a good thing because I've done this so many times. I know when I work on it for 1 or 2 days, probably just one day, honestly, the next day, if I just go play a little more normally and maybe try the shot just a little bit and not as extreme, I'm money. So that next, maybe the day or day after, I went out and played with Mark. And the first day I started working on it, there's no way I would have broken 78 if I would have started everything left and cut it back. And the day I played with Mark on his birthday, started every single shot left with a cut. Every single shot. Didn't have one shot that did not start left without a cut. I think I shot 69 or 70 and just played a nice round of golf. And I was like, you know, I should have been doing this, you know, years ago and I should have this part of my practice routine. You know, why haven't you worked on this? And you know, this is the shot you've been kind of lacking. Because I can always drop it inside and hit a high draw or hit some sort of, you know, straight shot right that may not draw back, but it's not going to be in the left water.
Right.
That's been usually my strength. So now adding this dimension to my game, I feel more comfortable right now putting the ball, putting it left than I do drawing the ball. And I'll, you know, do my drills where I'm going to work on getting the club a little deeper, more around me and hit some draws. And then I'll get that side of the game back. And if I can just kind of, what I've been working on, Andrew, is just kind of balancing it out, you know, working the ball left, right, right, left, where you're kind of always at a neutral zero, where for me, that would just be just almost just a start right, just a little start right draw. You know, that's more or less my neutral instead of just hitting all cuts, because then I lose the right to left side of the golf course so that it feels comfortable to me. Like if I look at a target right now, like in my bedroom looking at a tree, I feel so much more comfortable if I was going to work the ball back to that tree left to right now instead of right to left. So I know I can easily get the right to left back. It's just refreshing to know that I can do it left to right now and do it with confidence, even if there was trouble right at the 10. So that's kind of what I've been doing at the moment and been having some success. And it's nice. It's just nice to see the ball do what you think it's going to do. I think that's what makes golf a little more me and a lot of golfers.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Do you think most players on tour, what do you think like the split is as far as dominant cutters versus dominant drawers?
That's a good question.
Because obviously everybody works it both ways at that level.
Yeah.
But
there's a surprising amount of guys that don't work it both ways and they have made, you know, tens and 20 millions of dollars out there. Because you don't, that's the festival thing. This is like scoring, you know, all this stuff I've talked about is great and all. But, you know, actually scoring the golf ball in time for a tournament. And if, you know, if I don't feel comfortable hitting a left to right shot to a right 10, you know, I'll take one less club or aim at it and just make sure I hook it away from it and make sure I make a par when I'm not super comfortable with that shot. And that's what a lot of players on tour will do because they know what's going to happen if they just swing it right to left with almost certainty. So, you know, there's something to be said for that as well. I myself, I like to work well both ways. But some days, you know, the damn draw doesn't work. Or some days,
yeah,
my slice is a, you know, push slice. And I'm like, okay, that's two balls in the water with a slice, probably a fade. You know, I'm probably not going to try and do that anymore. So it's just feeling it out every week, every day, feeling, you know, what shots you can hit, what shots you, you know, are struggling with. And I will say, I you probably see more guys on tour cut the driver. Just with, I feel like the drivers nowadays maybe spin a little less. Maybe the ball spins a little less, but there aren't as many big drawers to the golf ball. And that's what I found is when I try and draw the golf ball too much with the driver, that's when I hit my weird shot.
Mm-hmm.
But if I'm seeing a fade, I don't ever hit anything weird. Usually. But
yeah. Yeah, it's crazy.
It might be different.
The ball, the driver, everything, right? Everything's just supposed to spin it so low. And, you know, that obviously makes fitting that much more important, especially even out on tour, you know, because a lot of these companies, they're shoving new drivers down everybody's throat. And it's almost like you got to kind of reset and figure out what your new normal is, to coin that term that we've been using so much lately with coronavirus. But, you know, you got to every year kind of reset and figure it out. For you, now, do you have Mizuno irons in the bag still? Are you Team Mizuno?
Yeah.
Okay. And then
Mizuno irons and wedges.
Yeah, irons and wedges. Which irons?
I just switched the JPX 919, and they're amazing. I've played them for a week and a half or so. Definitely the favorite iron that I've ever played of theirs and ever.
They're awesome.
I've only played King before this, but I love them. I see myself playing them for a long time.
Good. That's kind of a key, right? But you said you've got some Dynamic Gold S4s and X1s hanging around. Is that what you currently have in the bag, or is that something you're moving towards?
That is what I currently have in the bag, and I'm going to build at some point. Going to build my clubs were just a touch short of standard, and I'm going to build them, build a set that is standard or touch over, and just to see what happens. Or, you know, build, you know, if I was really bored, if I had a bunch of time, I would build a set even shorter. Just, you know, just I like building things and just seeing what happens. And if someone can tell me what happens when, or what's supposed to happen when you do this, and that's not necessarily what may happen, but I just like to, I like to learn things the hard way. I'm very, I don't want to say hard headed, but I guess I am. I can't even admit I'm hard headed. I think that's what makes me somewhat hard headed. But I just like to do things on my own. And I, for me, that's the only way I learn, is to do something and mess up once or twice. And then I'm like, oh, I just wasted all this time and energy. Okay, this doesn't work. Or okay, this does work. Or just a big learner on my own. I wouldn't even say I'm a fast learner. I'm very slow at a lot of things. Once I have it, I have it. But yeah, currently in the X1s and F4s and working on getting the Mizuno driver in play. I'm playing the Mizuno Hybrid and the Mizuno 3-wood. The Hybrid's really hot, goes high, and you can kind of work it whichever way you want to, and the 3-wood's the same, but I'm quite happy with the setup I have now. Like I said, I don't quite have the Mizuno driver in the bag working on it, but I love my setup right now.
The Hybrid. So you mentioned earlier you've got a bunch of 2-irons. You're a 2-iron guy. You like 2-irons. Now, is that like a collection thing? You just have like a thing for 2-irons, or is it, you know, you've got a long iron in the bag and a Hybrid?
I actually haven't played a 2-iron for a little while. I've been playing this 5-wood or this 4-wood I have. That's also Mizuno. It's okay. Interesting. I don't know that I'm a collector of 2-irons. I just want something that goes straight down the fairway, 240 to 260. That's what I've wanted, and I've, you know, tried it, you know, every company's 2-irons, different shafts, you know, metal, graphite, all this different stuff, and I'll find something good for, I feel like, a week or maybe 2 or 3 or 4 weeks, maybe a month if I'm lucky, and then it just goes to shit. Like, just one day, tee it up, left, right, way left, way left. Just no straight. And then I'll grab another one, and that one will go straight. And I'll test. And then I'll hit that one good for a week, pick it up one day, and then just can't find the fairway. So I'm like, okay. So those work for usually about two weeks to a month.
They have a
so
2-week shelf life. I'm looking yep. for one.
That's right. Exactly. It's just, the honeymoon stage lasts for 2 weeks with call plugs.
Well, sometimes, yes, sometimes you only need a good couple weeks though, right? You know, you only need a good week of a lot of fairway finders and a lot of par fives eaten up.
Absolutely. And if you, you know, if I hit them good for 2 weeks and then need something else, you know, why wouldn't I have 20 different 2-irons that I can choose from and, you know, take 3 or 4 off the course and hit, find one that I hit 3 or 4 times in a row and be like, all right, I'm going to hit this one. I at least have some sort of confidence and ability that it's going to go straight. So that's better than just swinging the same old golf club that I, you know, had been playing for the last month, just not to switch and keep hitting it, you know, sideways. So at least I have some confidence in this new one. That's the way I look at it. Wrong, right, or indifferent.
But right.
Hey, if it works.
Well, I always kind of like think about Baker and I go, you know, I don't know so much that he's tinkering to tinker. I think he does, and I could be way wrong, and he'll tell me. I think he just does it because that's what keeps him engaged and interested, you know, especially when he's not playing, when he's not practicing, when he's not playing. I think that gives him something to kind of keep him going.
Definitely, and that's something that, you know, I do. I'm sure you do, and I mean, it makes sense. We got to talk more trash about Baker because he's not here to defend himself. So this is really fun. But I mean, golf is kind of boring sometimes.
Boring.
Sometimes you're playing the same course over and over. You know, sometimes it's, you know, it can't be monotonous, or, you know, you play by yourself a lot of times. No, I don't enjoy that. But something you can do, that, you know, a really soft shaft and you're driving, just don't play, you know, and just watch what happens. And, you know, do something different with, you know, or sometimes I'll change my grip. I'll go and play, you know, 18 holes 2 days in a row with an extremely strong grip just to see how I can do. And my grip is a little weak, so that's a good thing for me to do, because then I'll go back to my normal grip and it won't be quite as weak. And just, you know, seeing how much easier it is for me to slice the ball when I have a really, really strong grip and I have to obviously swing it a little more around me and use a lot more body rotation. Just little things like that do make it fun for myself and Baker, and I'm sure everyone that does like to tinker a little bit, because it can get a little boring. It's not as fast paced, it's not as adrenaline going, but something that you can do and build on your own and just take it out and just see what happens. It's fun to mess around with things.
You know, what other sports have you played? Like, were you, you know, I know you, did you grow up your entire life in Indiana? Or were you just kind of, did you move there and then end up going to school there?
I did, no. From here, played all the sports growing up, basketball and baseball. And, you know, I'll give the same speech that everybody does. I feel like I was really good at baseball and basketball back in the day. And golf was my least favorite and where I was worst at. And I slowly got shorter and fatter. And I switched to golf. So I'm like, wow, I'm not going to sit the bench at freshman year basketball anymore. So I'm like, okay, it's time to change it up. That's when I started focusing more on golf. And gosh, I used to have a good arm in baseball. And now I'll go and try and throw something. And I have the worst arm. And it's so depressing. Like, I'll Denny McCarthy, don't ever bet Denny McCarthy about throwing a golf ball. If he can throw a golf ball, I bet 120 yards in the air. And it is unbelievable. And, I mean, he could have beat me out. I don't know how much money, but he could have beat me out a couple hundred bucks pretty easy. One day we were on the range. And I was throwing in the basket with my caddy. We always do these basket challenges where if you make it in the basket, it's, you know, 20 bucks. If you hit the basket, it's 10. And I couldn't get it to the basket. And Denny's like, you can't even get it to that basket. And I'm like, oh, let's see you do it, big guy. And he just launched it so far over this basket. And I'm just now realizing how bad of an arm I currently have. And it doesn't make me feel very much like an athlete, to be completely honest. I'm not very athletic anymore. I never really was, but I want to be, but I'm just not.
Well, I don't know. There's like, I think sometimes being an athlete is when you can find your own way to become good, then you're an athlete. Just because it doesn't fundamentally look like, you know, the best and the greatest athletes. Sometimes, you know, like tennis, I was a pretty decent tennis player for just picking up a tennis racket and going to town. But man, I didn't use my body at all. So like I wrecked my arm, and that's why I can't throw a baseball the way I used to. I've got to be so careful when throwing a baseball because one wrong move and it hurts more than anything. Totally not worth it. I'm just now, for Christmas, we got a basketball hoop. So I'm just now playing more basketball. I got my 9-year-old, so we're getting Gavin into it. He loves it. We go out and play one-on-one, and I just introduced him. We play horse around the world. I just showed him around the world, and then once COVID's over and we can start playing with other people, we'll get into some knockout because that's the greatest game that's ever been invented, ever. Don't care. Don't at me. And then you've got one-on-one, so we'll play one-on-one where if I miss a shot, I get -2 points. So he actually has beat me because, you know, we've gone to 24 and, you know, I don't block his shots. And I mean, the kid's 9, he's like tiny. He would never score on me. Right. But, that's my one rule is I'll never let you win, but I won't ever block your shots. And so we started doing the -2 for every miss and the 2 for every make. And the kids actually beat me twice. So I'm like hardcore into basketball, but a lot of that comes from growing up in Indiana, and to the exact same tone that you said it. Basically, once I got to 6'4" and I stopped growing and I never went into the gym and I never lifted weights, I knew I was never going to continue on with basketball. So I just ended up, you know, coming over and playing golf. But that being said, man, There's some big history in Indiana with basketball. I'm assuming you watched The Last Dance last night.
No, I did not. I'm not going to, though. I know. I was like 9:03, and I'm like, Courtney, we should, you know, like, we're gonna watch this, and she's, and we were like, all right, we'll just watch tomorrow. I can bend. It's on. You know, they're releasing another episode today, or is it just every Sunday?
Sunday, 2 episodes on Sundays. So. Look, all I'm saying is it is going to take you back. It is the greatest thing. You're going to just go find the closest basketball hoop you got, and you're going to go just ball out. That's what you're going to do.
Oh, we've talked about, we're installing a basketball hoop in our new house at some point in the near future, hopefully.
I love that.
So I saw something interesting last night. That I didn't know Michael Jordan took a year off of professional basketball during his career.
With injury, are you talking about in injury? So his second season, he broke his foot, and he was out until like the very, basically, they were like way out of the playoff race. He came back, even though there was this risk that he could basically ruin his career. He came back, and I'll just let you watch The Last Dance and you can figure it out. But there was so much drama to that. But yeah, he basically missed his entire second season until the very end.
I was talking about, I thought it was 93 or 94 when he went and played minor league baseball for the Chicago White Sox. And I don't know if he just was after the basketball season was over, but clearly baseball starts up now and basketball should still be going on. So I don't know exactly what I read on Twitter, but I'm going to have to go look at it. But I don't know how many years he tried to play baseball for, but I know he did.
Oh.
And it was in between, because he had two three-peats. Is that not correct?
Yeah. Oh, you're talking about like he straight up, yeah, he retired after his third NBA championship, I think after the 93-94 season. Nope, it had to be the 92-93 season, I guess. And he took that year off. Maybe he was gone a year, maybe a year and a half, and he joined back up with the Bulls. They didn't make the playoff, or they didn't win the NBA championship like the year he came back, but then they went for the next three-peat, I think. So, and that was like during the prime Reggie Miller days.
Yeah, but he won a three-peat. He won a three-peat, and then he took a year off. I don't know if he did take a year off where he just...
He retired.
I don't know.
He straight up retired and then came back. It was crazy.
And won three more.
Yeah. Dude, you're going to be as an athlete, as a professional athlete, you are going to, I think you're going to come out of this. I think every professional athlete is going to come out of this and they're going to go, we don't think properly. We don't do this right. That's what I think is going to happen.
And I remember seeing where the doctors were like, you know, if your risk of re-injury is 10%, and if you do it to be career ending, he's like, I'm going to play. And they're like, you're not thinking about this correctly. You know, if you had to take, you know, an Advil to clear your headache and you were taking 10 pills, or you had to choose from 10 pills, and if you choose one of them, it killed you. I did see a preview for that. So I didn't know he came back, and yeah, I got to watch it.
Yeah, that was the injury year. God, cool story. There's drama with the Bulls that I just never knew about. And it's amazing that they won through all of that, but it was almost like they won, you know, kind of to throw it in certain people's face. So I'll just let you watch it. Well, look, Adam, before you go, let's do this. For someone who doesn't know Adam Schenck and is deciding right now to become a supporter, this beautiful hunk of meat that you are, you know, all what are your specs? You 6'2"? You're a big guy. You're a tall guy. You can bomb it.
Yeah, probably almost 6'2".
All right. What do they need to know about your game out on tour, man? I mean, just like the rundown, I know we've been talking, but like going out and watching you, what are you going to do? Are you going to plot it around? Where are you going to shock some people? Where are you going to make the people happy?
Well, that's a great question. You know, I always say, and I started to say this recently. So my idea of the golf game is if you can play 72 holes and not hit too many weird shots, and you can, you know, position yourself correctly, if you can play smart, you know, you got a shot to play really good golf, professional level, whatever. But you know, I'm just trying to be consistent. That's what I want to be. Every time I tee it up, I want to have a chance to, you know, to win, or I want to, you know, okay, I'm not having a great week, I still want to finish inside the top 20. You know, that's kind of what I want to be known for, and you know, not missing many cuts. One of my goals this year was to not miss a single cut. And I think I've missed a handful or two handfuls. So, but they've been by less shots than the year before. So getting a little better than last year and the year before, but I want to be a player that does heat up and people think that he's going to say, well, oh, I'm going to take him in DraftKings this week because he always finishes by the top 20. And that's kind of what I want to be known for, is not just, you know, as inconsistent as I have been in the past. And every time I tee up, I want to, you know, make it mean something and not, you know, play golf just to play golf. Oh, I'm in this PGA Tour event this week, I have to play. And if I'm not feeling it, then I'm not going to put in all the work, and I'm not going to, you know, work out and practice correctly, then I'm probably not just going to play. And I just want to be a little more consistent than I've been in the past. And when I do get up on top of the leaderboard, I'm working very hard right now to stay there once I do get up near the top. So that's where I would want people to think of me in a way, maybe to perceive me, and that's how I want to be think of myself in a nutshell.
Well, I'm rooting for you, man. I always do, but you know, more now than ever with everybody taking the time off and everything we got going on. I'm ready for professional golf. I'm ready to see the boys of Jacksonville, the Indiana boys, get back out there on tour and you know, hopefully make a run up the FedEx Cup, as you say, and get some as many tournaments as you can, because I know it's going to be crazy when everybody's going to be wanting to play golf, and it's going to be that much kind of more of a fire drill to get into the playoffs. And you know, we got a couple majors. I mean, the Open getting canceled and all of that. I mean, how awesome would it be, though, to play the only Masters in the fall ever, you know? So you got to get out there and get that dub, man. I'm rooting for you, buddy.
I know. I appreciate it. Thanks for having me on. And I like to talk about golf. I don't know exactly what I'm talking about or if it makes any sense, but it's definitely one of my passions, that's for sure.
All right, brother. Adam Shank, thanks so much for hopping on the pod, man. I appreciate it.
All right. Talk soon.